When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
Last episode of the Goody Goody, Sabrina sat down outside and then inside with Starley Kine, and this happened.
I am very touched by Cowboy wanting to be in here, though, in your bedroom.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's because of my dog.
It is.
And I love that.
And he also loves you.
I love him loving me.
But let's get back in to the conversation. I believe we were talking about the probably my son, the Wolfie, and what he up to. Take a listen.
I mean, we got to get an Airbnb for Wolfie, which is expensive. He doesn't. Do you think he pitches in?
I kind of soon. I don't know. I saw him carrying that basket back and forth in one of your stories, and I'm like, he's ready to be put to work.
He did that for like half an hour. He was just carrying this basket around the house and just shopping in the house.
It's my favorite thing. Baby, like...
Determined baby play.
I love what is
going on in their mind. Just like what is happening in his mind when he's like rearranging things or like knocking all the shampoo bottles down to put them back up.
Yes, it's such a system, and I could watch it for hours and hours and hours. I find it so relaxing.
Shut your ears if you don't have one. It's baby talk.
Baby determination.
A baby determination. Okay. Speaking of baby determination, radio.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So you were in college and you started working for This American Life.
I was in college. I made a document. I had a neighbor. I lived in the East Village. So I had pretty much stopped going to class by that point. I was working in a bookstore across the street from NYU. I was like a playwriting, screenwriting major.
You were like Hugh Grant in Notting Hill.
I wish. Is that what he does? Was he a playwriting major?
No, he was in a bookshop. Whenever anyone says the word book or bookshop, I just picture Hugh Grant turning around and Julia Roberts is there, ready to be fallen in love with.
I did meet a boyfriend working that bookshop.
I'm sure you did.
Not like, the only thing was he wasn't my Julia Roberts. I made the relationship last longer than it should have because I was like,
PR is strong.
Yeah. Like, I was like, this couldn't have been for nothing.
Yeah. I mean, that's people live, people are together for decades just on that mantra.
Yeah.
This couldn't have been for nothing. Oh, God.
I lived in the East Village. There was an old woman who lived next door to me who was convinced I was a drug kingpin.
Oh my God, Starley Kine, the drug kingpin.
It's true. And she dedicated her life, like the way Wolfie has a dedication to those baskets, to arrange in the baskets, was her. She was Wolfie about outing me for being a drug kingpin. And she would paper the halls of our building with rave flyers and
like, what
neon rave flyers that she cut up, and on the back of them she wrote apartment 3 selling drugs here.
No. Mm-hmm.
And she put them.
Wait, did you have like tons of friends coming through, or what was happening?
So I was in college, but there was also everyone else was in college
apartment
in the building
3 selling drugs. This lady's cool.
She was,
I
yeah.
like her.
She was Wolfie, I'm telling you.
She was Wolfie with the best.
So true.
What was the end goal? So, was she like telling the landlord, like, check out all these
she
flyers?
Was like a vigilante who was hoping, I mean, who knew, I don't even know whose attention she was hoping to get. She could not stop. And so she would put them, she'd put one on the front door, like when you come into the building, she'd put one on the front door, then there'd be one above the mailbox, then there'd be one on my door. And like I made a documentary about her where I actually, so like there was college students in the whole building, it wasn't just me, so everyone had friends. And also Adriana from Sopranos lived across the hall.
This lady needed to move.
Yeah, but she was like, I'm sure in her mind she was like,
apartment in the East Village.
Yeah, and also like, why does she have to move? I should be the one who has to move. Even, but like
I just think like majority rules a little bit.
She was like a one woman
show.
Yeah. But a one woman who was, in her mind, she was like, I'm saving the neighborhood. And again, I wasn't selling drugs. So the threat was not real. And I made a documentary about her, and I would like, I was in my neighbor's apartment, and I would literally
audio documentary
video.
Wait, you were filming this woman? No wonder you drove her crazy.
I didn't film her until after she was already doing
crazy things.
These things. She also,
and did you blur her face?
No, we didn't need to do any. It was like a video document. I wasn't playing it for like TMZ. I was playing it for my class. Like, what do you think? Who is seeing this?
I just still think it's like, honestly, like, I thought it was so crazy that she was doing the flyers in the hallway until you said you fucking shot an unauthorized documentary.
No, it was authorized. She
saw
it.
That's like what crazy people fear the most, is that there's cameras filming her.
It's true. I definitely fed into that. But she liked it. We became obsessed with each other. I feel like,
oh my God.
I met her crazy with my own crazy. She's in.
I want to do a dating show where the two contestants so far are Dennis and her. And we'll add them.
Am I trying to date both of them, or we're trying to find them mates?
Well, the way I see it, it's kind of like that show where there's like a divider, and then you're on one side and you're asking questions of all the contestants.
Or we do like a This Is My Life, and she just tells my life, and it's all about me being a drug kingpin.
Or we do, yeah, I mean, that's a whole other, we can do two different shows and see which one gets more ratings, and then we'll go to second season with that.
Is her face blurred in your TV show? Because now,
of course.
Okay.
She also gets paid a stipend.
I didn't pay her anything.
Okay, so I made a doc about
I made
her.
This doc for my class, because I had to like finish this
just
class.
Just want the audience to know that Starley's toe is very close to Cowboy's penis.
I know, I feel like it was so inevitable. Also, Cowboy's got like a cone on his head, so it's like this, it feels like a, I don't even know what.
Oh yeah, my dog, my French bulldog, mixed with Boston Terrier, keeps licking his paws. And I just want to know if you have any tips, if you're listening to this and you know your dog did this, please help me.
Yeah, because right now I'm like, it's very easy to forget for me to tell myself I'm not petting a dog because there's no head right now. Like, it's like a little soft foot rest for me.
Until that lipstick comes slurping out.
Yeah, then I'll remember.
Okay, so you show the documentary to your class. The woman busts in. No, she's got a machine gun.
She's in terrible the documentary yelling at me, and like, not about the filming, about like, because I babysat a little kid, and she accused him of being a mule.
The
like
child.
He was a 5-year-old.
And you have this on tape?
Yeah. I mean, I like, literally a VHS tape. I don't even, I mean,
on
I have
cue,
it.
On cue, Cowboy just farted a thick diarrhea smell.
Yeah, this footrest just farted.
Oh, man. Do you smell it?
Yeah, it might have been. I
no,
do smell
that's
it.
My dog. That is, if it's thick going in your nose, then it's my dog, just a stew.
Maybe we should do the breathe-in exercise right now.
Yeah,
maybe
no, we definitely
make
should.
Sure not say anything that we have to breathe in right now. Deeply in. I did it for class, but then I worked at this bookstore, so I would then have like barbecues on my roof, and I would bring people over, and they would watch the movie, and then they'd go in the hall, and she would stand at her door with a flashlight, opening and closing her door and shining the flashlight into the hall.
God,
so you could like
honestly a comedy icon.
Icon, yeah. Like Andrew Dice Clay.
She needs at minimum a 10-minute special on Netflix.
Yeah.
Maximum 90 minutes.
She was ahead of her time.
The first time you met her, were you like, hello, Newman? Or were you like, oh, this lady's going to be cool?
I mean, she was just like a New York East Village old woman in a building. Like, I never saw her anywhere except for like outside on the side. Like, I don't think she ever left the one block radius.
Okay, so she's pulling pranks.
She's pulling pranks. She's really, I feel like I kept her alive for years because of this.
Yeah, she had something to prove. Yeah. She had a mission. She had something to put in her basket.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so.
And so then one of the people who worked in the bookstore knew one of like the founding creators of This American Life. So she, a Canadian, Paul Tuff.
All right.
You know him?
No, I don't.
Hmm. Okay. Which one? I don't know which
but
one.
I know you really want me to know.
I don't know which one of you.
Your
is
eyes
more
lit
or
up
less
like
Canadian.
That I haven't seen in years when you said his name.
Nice man. Nice Canadian man.
And that's
That's how you live forever, dog.
Okay, so Paul Teff saw the doc.
He heard about the doc and then did a story for like early This American Life about me and her obsessed with each other.
I want to look it up.
I think what I sound like a little street thug.
You do?
Like I mean, it
turns out you are selling full drugs. You're like, yeah, so I measure the dime bag. I put the coke in there and Starly?
It'd be quite a reveal if I was leaving that out.
Why are you wearing a do-rag, Starly?
And just to be clear, she thought I was like the kingpin of the entire. No, I just feel like it's weird when you hear yourself. Don't you think it's weird when you hear your voice from past stuff and you don't notice your voice has changed until you hear it and you're just like, what the hell?
Yeah. But you were doing a little.
I wasn't doing.
Speaking in patois or what?
I wasn't doing anything. I just feel like when I hear it, I'm like, I just feel like I sound so weird.
Okay.
And to me, it reads a street thug, but not in like a. Not even connected to the kingpin part.
Okay.
Like more like
it's a different
like
kind of a
like
thing.
More like a
hey,
like
wise guy.
Yeah, exactly. Like a kid.
Yeah, you order.
Yeah, like a kid selling a kid who would work for Dick Tracy or something.
Oh my god, I gotta find this.
But that was my normal speaking voice. I'm not doing a bit.
Okay.
It just sounds odd to me when I hear it. So then I was a part of This American Life. Then I worked for them. Then I became part of it. Like a producer, writer.
Awesome.
Moved to Chicago.
Was it fun?
Yeah. It was fun because it was like there was no other radio. Like it was like the cool radio show.
Yeah, it was the place
like,
to be.
It was the place. It was now people, I feel like, I don't know what it's like to work with This American Life now, but like it was like everyone was listening and it was very exciting and fun. And so then I did that. And then I stopped doing that. And then I was still like writing for them. And then I tried to write. I was supposed to write a book that I didn't finish. I was supposed to, and I never finished it. Still could. Like, I had a book still deal.
So you could get the money and finish the book?
Yeah, I could, like, finish it and then get the money. I wouldn't ask for the money until I finished it. But it was, like, technically a book deal.
Whoa.
And then I, like, got
Do
all bogged down.
Do you think about that?
I used to think about it so much because it was, like...
What a stupid question.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about it once?
But it's kind of weird. It's weird how little I think about it now. Like,
That's
it was
good.
Like truly the thing I was most tortured by. It turns out it's really.
Not
I don't
what
think,
you want to do.
Well, maybe I could do it now, actually. I think then I thought it shouldn't have been the only thing I was doing. Like, I thought I had to, like, remove myself from, like, doing. I didn't do anything else. Like, I would do, like being comedy shows, but I would never like, I can do that every night because I have to go write my book. Like, I thought it was like punishment. Like, I wouldn't, what I like to do is be around people, collaborate. I like the social aspect of performing. I like people. And then I had this thing, I got the book deal so easily because like they were kind of handing them out to This American Life people at the time.
Yeah.
And so, and it was so naturally not the, I think I, it was so naturally not the main thing that I should have been doing that because I was doing it, I like just sequestered myself off so thoroughly. And then I didn't finish the book and I didn't do this other stuff that I would have liked to be doing.
Yeah. That reminds me of when I used to with stand up, like when there was an important show, I would, lock myself away and be like, I just got to think about this show. And I wouldn't even be thinking about the show. Yeah. I'd just be building the anxiety around the show so that by the time I got there to do my 5 minutes, I was like a shell of myself and
Like
truly on autopilot and fail at everything. And you lost your day and you got in a fight with your, you know, person and you all so that you could guarantee you bomb.
Exactly. Yeah. You build it up so high.
Mm-hmm.
It was a crazy, when I think back on that time, because I honestly think, I also think the secret I learned is that it's hard to write books. And then I've now met plenty of people who find it hard to write books. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it takes a long time, but I thought it was supposed to like not take any time. And every single, I lost so many days because I just like, I wouldn't allow myself. I had a boyfriend at the time and we moved to New York and I got the book deal like right after. Or there was a time when I was like working on the proposal before I got the book deal because I met this editor and she was like, just basically like anything you write, we'll buy your book. And I lost like a year not writing the proposal. And when I finally wrote the proposal, it was like a it was like three pages, and they were like, she meant it. Like, they really were like, I lost so much time stressing myself out about it. And I had this boyfriend that we had just moved back to New York from Chicago, and I like wouldn't let us like explore the city. Like, wow. I wouldn't let us do anything. And then he and I broke up.
Neither.
Like, he kind of like, I feel like he could go
you
out
be here while I think
kind of you be here watching me not do this. Like, I think I just caused so much anxiety in both of us. It was unfair. And then we broke up, and then that was the thing that like made I as soon as we broke up, I like sold the book, because you know, you get that perspective when you go through a breakup, or you suddenly like understand what was unhealthy. And in that window of understanding that, like, I sold this book and then proceeded to totally stress myself out about writing the book.
Well, looking back at what would be the lesson that you would tell the Dennis of yourself?
Lessons!
I would say you don't have to view it as punishment. Anything that starts to feel like punishment, you should change tactics. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just...
Listen to yourself when what you're doing is not working.
Listen to yourself and be kind to yourself about it, because you're not failing. It's not. It's not.
And understand the balance of like hours in and work put in with fun and spontaneity.
Yeah, and diminishing returns. So that's a real thing.
Yeah,
and you need to do the thing. What you think of as weakness is actually what your needs is actually what you, is needs that you need fulfilled.
Yeah,
because that's what I didn't understand. I thought anytime I needed to like see people or like. Like, truly, if I had just like taken like a UCB class or something, that would have been the answer. Like, I thought I wasn't allowed to have any of it because I thought that was weakness and not what real writers do. And it's actually your need screaming like for food and oxygen. Yes. And you.
And there is no what real writers do. There is no what real stand-ups do. There is no what real actors do. It's just what works for you.
I once wrote for Vulture that you had this like TV like what's it called, bracket thing where they were pitting TV shows against each other, and they like assigned me. I had to pick. I'm gonna get hate mail even telling you this, but like they were like Sex and the City versus 30 Rock, and I chose Sex and the City.
That's fine.
Yeah, but it wasn't fine for the internet because
look, Sex and the City is giving you more story. 30 Rock is giving you more jokes.
Yes, it was a hard. But it was against like what's the better sitcom. And so then I picked Sex and the City, and the hate comments were so like I had to turn off the internet. Like I had to shut the computer.
Yeah, because then it was also gendered, and people on the internet do not like a woman.
Yeah, they didn't like any
like
of
you
it.
Have a pussy? All right.
But well, I eventually
there will be comments about it.
But I eventually got close. It was a long game because then someone wrote so that all these hate comments, everyone was mad at me. Then like months later, there was an article about a man who had literally like this couple was on the way to the hospital. This young couple, the mom was pregnant. She was going to give birth. This man had hit them. They had died. And it was somehow Vulture had written about it. And someone in the comments was like, this is pretty bad, but Starley's worse for picking Sex and the City. Then months after that, I wrote something that they liked and they apologized to me in that comment. So I got the whole full circle. Like I got an entire arc of human growth where the same commenter who had called me the worst monster, grew as a person and apologized to me all in the comments.
Okay,
section.
So that's the third person on the dating show. We got Dennis, we got old lady from the East Village, and we got internet comment growth guy. If you had to pick right now who to spend the rest of your life with, who do you pick?
Dennis.
Ooh, you are in love with Dennis, because the correct answer would be the East Village lady who's going to die soon, has that sweet apartment in the East Village that you could Airbnb easily. Just, I'm sure you could Airbnb it for like $5,000. I bet her rent is like $300.
Yeah.
That's called a living, honey.
Deals.
Starley and I both wrote on Search Party last season, but Starley's been on Search Party from the beginning. Search Party is one of the best shows out there. Yes. How did you get tied in to the mix?
I got tied in because I did my podcast mystery show. I eventually did that podcast after giving up my book. And then
that's awesome. So that's actually like a really cool thing, and probably like one of the more monumental things of your life that came out of one of the bigger failures.
Yeah. I mean, the failure didn't necessarily have to happen for the podcast to happen.
No, but everything happened.
Yeah, everything happened. And everything happened. But it definitely felt different. Like, what was crazy about making Mystery Show was like there was It was the least doubt I've ever felt in my life. Like, I had, like, such a path. I understood what it was supposed to be, everything that happened. And also, like, magic was being sprinkled in. Like, I kept doing mysteries, and they kept getting solved in the most magical way. Like, you know, all that was happening, and yeah. I saw my way through it. I felt so sure of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, which was, it's interesting. You really know what that, the difference, how that feels when it's, when you juxtapose it against it, when you haven't felt that.
Yeah.
Like when it feels right, it does feel right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, so then
when I compare it to my like stand up journey, it's like when it feels right, it definitely feels right. But then like to make it feel right, you have to have so many wrongs. It just like is part of the path.
Yeah. And you have to kind of like fear returning to something too. Like I kind of felt with Mystery Show that if it didn't work, I'd have to be like sent back to that room of writing a book. Like, because I'd somehow made it.
Yeah.
I don't think I had to have made writing a book. I could have been doing other things, but since I didn't know that.
Orgasmic after like just years of, you know, not coming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And not coming because I was like
rubbing a sandwich against yourself. Yeah, being like, why isn't this baloney making me
yeah. And just like euphoria. it was all about
while your poor boyfriend locked in a cage next to you.
Yeah. He's fine. He ended up fine. Yeah. I think you start to see like you only get, even if you get more than one shot, you start to like feel that it does help you sometimes to be like, I gotta make this count.
Yeah. So you made it count with the Mystery Show. Yeah. And Charles and SV contacted you?
No, then TBS contacted me and said they liked Mystery Show and they wanted to talk about like it being a TV show. And I was like, but I hear there's something called scripted television that seems fun. Because all I had done was real people stuff, and I definitely wanted to like segue over. Uh-huh. And then I basically like, I remember.
Is that something you dreamed about when you were young?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to go into radio or documentary. Like,
you always wanted to be writing shows.
Yeah. Like I was studying like fiction. Like I was, yeah. You know, like it was such an accident that I ended up in radio. And I only ended up in radio because it was a good show and it was like the cool show. But I wasn't like, I'd never. There wasn't even podcasts. There was nothing to like belittle and the hope to aspire. This American Life did not exist. I never listened to NPR. I didn't care about any of that. And so, then I felt like as much when I went to This American Life, it felt like such an instant fit and I felt so at home and like the sensibilities made so much sense. But it was like, it kind of had taken me off the path of, ever since I was little, I thought all I was going to do was like make movies or like write mm-hmm. books. And it was all fiction.
Yeah.
And so then, it was nice. And then it became hard to like figure out how to return to actually do that, because the weird thing about working for This American Life was everyone seemed to love it, but everybody was like, we love it so much, never do anything else.
Mm.
And I find that with Mystery Show too, that like
people want you to keep making Mystery Show.
Yes. So specifically. And yeah. the more,
well, it's a proven concept. It's like you created a business.
Yeah. And it blinds people. Like it really, like it's like so bright that like they
you've
can't
proven you can do something and they're like, do that trick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they,
it's your hit song.
It's my hit song. Yeah. 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 It's like a real, I find it to be a real thing.
And is it, do you feel like cursed by it?
I feel cursed in that way. Cause I feel like,
but then blessed because it is the thing that like, it's a calling card. It's like a thing that like people, you can point to that's like, oh yeah, she really did that well.
Yeah. I mean, definitely more blessed than cursed with Mystery Show. Absolutely. I mean, mostly blessed because it was something I love doing and I'm so happy that people love it. But I never would have, I didn't anticipate, there was such a direct difference. I did This American Life stories that were popular mm-hmm. and it wasn't like people were like, people would be like, oh, that should turn into like a show about your life or like a scripted
thing.
Well,
it's such a, to be honest, Mystery Show could and should be a show. And when you're ready to like make it a show, it's just such a like packaged and ready thing.
Yeah.
Proven concept. You're great at it. It's like, you know, that's just something that you could take further if you wanted to, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
And then also Search Party happened.
Yeah.
And that's a new other thing that you could be like pigeonholed for, is like you write like cool, fun, funny.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. Although, yeah, that's it. That. Yeah. Right. You write things only on that don't come out yet.
Yeah. Search Party's gonna come out. Season 3 will come out early 2020.
Yeah. Are we allowed to say that? I don't know if we're even allowed to say when.
Who knows?
Yeah. It'll come out. Yeah. It's so great. And season 3 is the great. You were there. Yeah. We're all in it.
We're all in it. I play a valet that is very weird looking. Long ponytail.
Yeah.
Easter egg, pink shirt. Shocking to see myself.
I feel like you being in the show is an Easter egg in itself.
Yes. It's so fitting that I was dressed like one.
We also had a screening with all of our friends, and I feel like all of our friends are in it in various cameos, and so that was the funnest way to watch season 3, because every time anyone appeared there was the biggest cheer.
That's the fun part about that show, is it does feel like it's like friends making a show.
Oh yeah. And what's so they're so good with casting, because I feel like they are. So many small parts are inspired by their friends, and I feel like it's so satisfying. It's actually similar to when I was making Mystery Show. There's so many things that had friends involved. Like my friend made my theme song. Another friend drew the logo. My friend for the clients, and when you put your friends in something, it feels like this was my life's work. My life's work was befriending, was being the kind of person that had this ability to they had other people like this be around me. And then we all grew up and made things that showcase your friend's greatest talents.
Yeah. When we broke stories on Search Party, we didn't really think about act breaks. Did we?
Because
I worked on network shows so much, and it would always be like, okay, let's think about the act breaks and build around that. But I remember just in Search Party, we were just thinking about moves in the story. It was very flowy.
Yeah. I think we had buttons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's weird because when it's on HBO, when it will be out now, there's no commercials. Because it went from being a TV show on TV to now
it's
streaming.
Be on now a streaming platform.
Yeah. So there's not commercials. So even those act breaks moments are different now.
Yeah.
And even if you watch Search Party on a streaming platform, there might be bookends where the scene picks up is different than if you're coming off of a commercial. It might be the same line almost.
Yes.
I think we do break with act breaks, but I don't think it's as much of a focus as network.
Kind of show would you like to make?
I have an idea. I think I would like to make, I love world building shows.
What did they mean?
It means
Westworld?
Kind of Westworld. I don't want to make Westworld, but
it's the most literal interpretation.
It is kind of, because they built a Jurassic Park, Westworld.
Jurassic Park, Avatar. No, Avatar is not it.
I don't know. Who knows? I feel like Avatar has left my memory and it's never going to return.
Well, we're a world building show, so that means not set in this world, a world that
you
create?
It can be set in this world, but I like it when I like when the world is so committed to, it's not it's almost I can, even Breaking Bad's a world building show too. It doesn't have to be, it can be set in this, it definitely can be set in this world, but it's it's almost like a contained thing. I like how in Breaking Bad, you only meet five characters, and it's kind of even though it takes place in Albuquerque, it's almost fictional version of Albuquerque.
Yeah.
But it's grounded. I like when they're grounded and real. They don't have to all be Westworld. They definitely don't have to all be Westworld. But my favorite part of Westworld was that it did build a world. I think that seems fun.
Okay. So you have an idea for a world, but you're not going to tell us. Because why would you give it away?
Yeah.
But that might be your next thing.
Maybe, yeah.
That might be my hope,
yeah. But I don't know if I can keep the hope alive on my own, though.
I'll keep it alive.
Okay.
Well, I'll keep it alive.
We can breathe it in.
Your hope will be a plant that we all water. The sun will be what sun shines on it.
Yeah, well, the hope has to be the plant being moved so that it can see the light.
The hope is the plant being moved so it can see the light. Okay,
we have to move the plant into the light, because otherwise, the plants need to be given a direction.
Is that a general meeting with Viacom?
I hope is a general.
That'll be what we do with that. Scraping off the doubt is going to be just you're going to be doing your mantra, which is putting hope in the basket and not doubt.
That's my mantra.
Yeah. The gap of relationship. We know that one of the three people that'll fill it, we know it's probably Dennis.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I can visualize the hope in the basket. Wolfie's moving the hope around. Because I feel like that seems really productive to me. Yes. Like as like a soothing meditative state, just like imagining Wolfie moving my hope from one part of the living room to another part of the living room.
Yes.
I can get down with that.
Okay, cool. Perfect. That's solved. And now, you know, philanthropy is a really essential part of getting all your mojo goody goody heart pumping.
I love philanthropy.
And so if you could be philanthropic.
Mm-hmm. Who would I give to?
No. What can you tell people that are listening? You're someone who's, despite starting this podcast off by being like, I have nothing but gaps. you actually have accomplished things that I think people would really like to.
Well, I can tell them how to feel better.
Yeah. Well, no, just in, like, how would you, if you were talking to someone who wants to start a successful podcast or to write on a cool show, what are some tips that you could give them?
Okay.
Ooh, that's a spicy tip.
For writing on a show, they don't listen to like any, first of all, don't listen to anyone who says they can't do it. Because I feel like
anyone who says that you can't do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I feel like there are people out there who say can't do it. They don't understand the system. That's like a
really.
And
they think that it's like a bad career thing. And it's like, no, you get health insurance paid well. And there's plenty of jobs out there. And the more different you are, we're at a time more than ever where people are recognizing that diverse storytellers, people that have different points of view, are so needed.
Yeah. I mean, I had a crazy thing where after I worked on Search Party, my own reps, who are not my reps anymore, told me, you'll never work in TV. And I was like, I just worked in TV. And they were like, it's not possible. This is the mystery show thing. Yes. They were like, well,
you have to sell mystery show.
They were like, it's the only thing you can do. It's impossible. You'll never make the transition over. No one's ever made the transition over. And I was like, I've worked in TV.
That's so
nuts. We know so many people who went from doing one thing. Like you said, they like things that are people who have
different
life experiences.
View, yeah.
And three different agencies told me that they would.
Wow.
And like, it was so crazy.
So don't listen to.
Don't. It's just not. First of all, that's not helpful. And like, there are actually people out there who somehow benefit from telling you that. And it's just not true. Like, it's hard. And and honestly, like, the main thing about breaking into all this stuff is like knowing people, but you can like knowing people is actually like, to me, kind of like a tangible tip. You know what I mean? Because it just, the way you know people is by doing something that you're interested in. You meet people who are also doing it.
Well, one of your non-gaps is that you are very like, you're a connected person. You're like in yourself and you can meet I said with my friend in the tacos, it's like you didn't meet for very long before she was like, she's cool, you know, like you're.
Yeah. And I like to, and I also like to, I like to help people. Like I really believe in, if you can help someone who you want to help, you can't, like, don't hoard it. I like to give, like, I really do like to give advice. Like I try to listen when people ask me for advice to like what they actually like, make it very specific, because I feel like
being generous and sharing
and like the mix of practical advice with the building up, I think is really important.
Yes.
You know, like listening, like actually, and not just giving the advice that you would do for yourself, like trying to tailor it. And I just feel like, but definitely for me, I spent a lot of time being so discouraged and really believing that I couldn't have any of this. Like I believed it when people told me there was no way to like break in. And I just now have heard it enough where I'm like, there's a reason they're saying that and you can't listen to that. It's so discouraging. And it's not only is it discouraging, it's not true. It's not the same as being like, it's.
And anyone who's saying that is speaking based on their own failures and the thing that freezes them from trying to do the thing.
Yeah.
That,
or like they don't want to try. They don't want to help you. Yeah. Like they want it all for themselves. There's something to it. Cause it's just, it's, you can say it's hard. It's an uphill struggle. You'll get some rejection, but to say like, you can't do it, you can't get in, it's just like, it's just not true.
Yeah. So Starley Kine is here.
Lessons
to tell you.
You can do it.
You can fucking do it.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know, anyone making my, the hardest thing I have is that I made stuff that I like, and it's a weird state of mind I'm in where like I'm trying to figure out like how to get back to being invested in what I did. But if you're if you're like just starting out and you haven't, like, just do anything. Like, I've made these dumb blocks for myself from like, it's almost like success led to this.
Yeah, but you're talking about what builds your block, but everyone's got a block, and some people's block is made from like, I've never accomplished anything, so why would I think that I could? Your block is made of like, I've accomplished something, so how do I go about doing it again?
Yeah. So I'm saying, if you haven't accomplished something yet, to me, I'm almost like jealous because you get, it's all out there. Like, okay, you've got blocks ahead.
So live in the excitement of the infinite potential.
Yeah. And it's,
I would say the same thing to you though.
I'll receive that okay. You're giving that to me, and I'm giving them,
give it back to me, babe.
Well, you're my hero. See, I can't do that. You think I can burp on cue? And you questioned why I thought it was inevitable you were gonna be a sitcom star with that talent.
Oh god, this has been a fun and good and very real deepy.
Are they not really real normally?
No, they're real. They're all sorts of things. They're always different, but I really like this one.
Was I too real?
No, I think I feel like this is an episode you can put in your ear when you're feeling like, huh, you know? So many people, I mean, also back to the kind of society, we're really taught to project these confident versions of ourselves.
Yeah.
And I really, I mean, like, to me, the goody goody is getting deeper into, the insecurities and how to get out of them. And also just how, when you say them out loud, we all have the same, we all struggle with the same issues of worthiness. And
I think it becomes less and less safe to say that. And that's what I find so interesting is like, I think people don't feel like they're allowed to say when they have insecurities, and it's helpful to hear when people, and I find it helpful, but like, I think we're living in, cause it's not the same.
I think people get it wrong because in the balance, there is like definitely like the mantra of manifesting and seeing the things that are working and weaseling into the wins is important. It's important to like put that foot forward. But what's missing in that is the balance of the vulnerabilities and how do I actually feel and what actually, you know,
what
am I actually getting out of locking myself in this room to try and write this book?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And yeah, right. And if like that was such a real case, like if I had just said I felt, if I had like voiced all my fears, they would have been salt. Somebody would have been like, well, it's hard to write a book, you know what I mean? But if you keep them inside, it just costs you your life.
Yeah.
And you don't want to, the main thing is like, don't cost yourself your life.
Yeah.
Because you can't get that part back.
No.
And like each phase of our life is, we all have different, you keep getting to have phases, but they're different phases. So like you have to be like, try to capture the phase when it's happening, because you won't be able to make, if I were to write that book now, it'd be a different book because I can't write the book that I would have written then. That I was a different person. And I love that I have these old radio stories because like it captured me from then, you know what I mean? And so like the more you can do that, get something down while you're in your present time, you won't be able to ever do it the same way again. And you actually want a record of your life in that way.
Keep a diary, you're saying?
No, make stuff, even if you're afraid, because I mean, this is really what I should be applying to myself.
Okay.
Because you won't, even if you make something later, you'll never be able to make the same thing that you made in that. You change as a person. And like it's, you can't just be like, I have an idea at like 25 that I'll just get around to at 35 and it'll be the same idea. Like you actually need to be that person at 25 who had that idea and execute it, because it will never be the same execution again. And it might be, that's so, you can't do that to all your ideas, but I just feel like you kind of run a record of you want a record of your creative life, and it's not the same as a diary.
Okay.
Like jokes you told when you were younger, aren't you glad you told them though?
Some of them I truly wish I hadn't.
No, you don't, because like you change. Yeah, like yeah, it's no, just like it's so interesting to me. It's so interesting that there is like a, there's an expiration date to our ideas because we actually can age out.
Well, I had material about like, yeah, boys, sure. I just don't feel like having a boyfriend right now. I mean, like, I just like, as soon as they, you know, it's fun to have crushes, but as soon as a guy likes you back, are you with me, ladies? It's like, gross. You know?
I want to see it. Did you do those? Did you perform?
Yes.
I want to see them. So you wish you hadn't, but aren't you glad?
No, it's just like cringy to look at.
I want someone
pretending to know themselves that are like so far off the mark.
Yeah.
But like, you know, not, true. I'm happy that I was expressing myself.
I just feel like.
I just think one thing that's dangerous about like, you know, constantly like have a creative stamp. It's like sometimes your creative stamp is no creative stamp.
Oh, and, for
and
sure
also
that, yeah.
Accepting like part of like the forgiveness thing. I think it can be like even more frustening.
Yeah.
Ice-tastic to when you like. Start thinking about things that you haven't done and then
you can't compare, you can't put that pressure on, but there's something like I think you can actually tell the difference, and there's a texture to when you're not doing something because you're comparing and paralyzed, and there's a certain time when like even when that runs out and you're like, well, now I should do it for myself, and you still don't. Like there's a point I've become so much more afraid, but like what I used to do is when I was feeling like I really had to do something, mm-hmm. I would just like sign up to something, a live thing. So I had to come up with an idea.
Yeah.
And that wasn't about like any kind of, that was the pressure I needed to like get out of my head.
Yeah.
Cause
there's a website called badslava.com, BADSLAVA.com. Yeah. For anyone that's listening, if you feel like you could be motivated, like Starly had in the past, by live performance, it's a list of all of the open mics all around the world, so you can just like make an appointment to like get some of your thoughts out at a mic.
Yeah, that seems,
do that.
That seems great, because it's like, so even though it's so scary, but it's like also low pressure. Mm-hmm. Like it, sometimes you just need that thing that is not, mm-hmm. not tied to anyone else. Yeah,
and without any expectations of like, and then I'll do my HBO special. Just like, no, just to like give yourself a deadline to write something down and perform it.
Yeah. I have a goody-goody thing for you to say nice about you.
Oh, tell me.
I feel like you're the only, maybe not the only, there's the thing that's special about you is that when good things happen to you, everyone is happy for you. Like we love it. And I think that takes like a really, really special person for that to be the case.
Thank you.
Does that sound true to you?
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel very like part of what I really love about this job is my dressing room, and Shauna made it so nice, and my friends that are in it, and like it just that's such a, my friends are such a big part of my life, and to share it and truly feel that, like truly feel like when I, like you guys came last week, and to just like walk into my room and feel so cool because my friends are there and truly happy.
Like that's the thing, you know, the difference when like there's people who like get things and you're just like, even if you want to be like, I feel like you, like we feel like joy over you getting like not just to show everything, like there's, and I feel like
it feels
everyone,
like a team win.
It just feels like you've built a life so that it feels like a team win. And I feel like even if I meet people who like barely know you, I can get that feeling from them about like being happy for you, or like even if we're like watching your Instagram and you're like aren't like taking a trip, like it's you make us feel a different quality to our like voyeurism almost. Like I feel like it causes people joy to support you, and that's your doing.
Can I say a goody goody thing about you?
Yeah, you already gave me one, but yeah,
I already gave you one, but that was from Ingrid. My goody goody thing about you is that I'm always excited to see you, and I think that you have such a unique view and such an honest, you know, like all the stuff that we've been talking about the way like people put a mask on. I feel like it's so easy for you to just like, when we chat, to like get real and talk about what you're really thinking about. And I miss working with you because you were so funny and sharp and smart in the room. And I'm really so excited about the things that you make. And I can't wait for a dash of hope, scraping of doubt, and, you know, with or without Dennis on your arm. I just can't wait to see you fly.
Oh, thank you. I miss working with you so much.
Well, now we just get to work together on podcasts.
This is now our work.
Honestly. This is a record on the goody-goody. We've talked for longer than ever before. We were outside. We were inside. I put my son to sleep in the middle. And
the
honestly,
MTV Music Awards happened somehow in between. Two dogs went from being like lively to passed out.
Lipsticks were out of the penises. Lipsticks were back in. And I have to say, I wouldn't have it any other way.
And that's how you live forever, dog.
Starly, breathe in.
And breathe out to say goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, Vina.
Hello, Mama.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Chilling out. Put on the AC and Cowboy and me are just chilling out here, watching TV, knitting.
Oh, yeah. We should reveal to the listeners that my mother is in Los Angeles helping with Wolfie, living that LA life. Has she already gotten a membership at a yoga studio? Yes. Has she already walked 3 miles today? Yes. Is she going to be ripped by Friday? Of course,
oh,
honey.
I wish. I wish it'd be so quick. Yeah.
I bet you could have a six pack by Friday if you keep
on
walking around pushing that stroller.
Yeah, up the hill here. Well, coming back.
I've never had a six pack. Have you ever had a six pack?
No, I don't think so, but I was in better shape and skinnier.
I know, but I feel like a six pack is like just a delusional goal for that everyone kind of has, but it's not actually, because there was a time where you were like not eating a lot when you were younger and still you didn't have a six pack.
Well, a six pack you get by working out. It's muscles, isn't it?
No, but it's mostly being thin.
Well, I was
even
very
if you're,
thin. Yes,
like,
I was
Wolfie
very
came
thin.
Out of Shauna's belly.
I was
with kind of
anorexic for a little while there. Wasn't eating much. So I was very thin. I mean,
it's tough
you
to
could
be
see
a
all
lady.
The ribs, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
You could? How did you stop being anorexic?
Well, my mom took me to the doctor and he gave me some, I don't know, some pills or something. And that kind of, you know, changed things.
Well, I didn't know that your mom, like, it was an open thing that you had an eating disorder?
Was, like, you know, I stopped, like, I was eating very little, you know, mainly vegetables and, you know, no fat and hardly any, you know, carbs. And, I mean, I had other problems, you know, I stopped having my periods, so she took me to the doctor, you know.
How old were you?
I think I was about 17. I was about 17, yeah. Yeah. At that time, that eating disorder was not really so much discussed or talked about or known.
Like it wasn't
you
known
know.
To be a problem.
I mean,
it was like,
just,
you go, girl.
Yeah,
keep being
see
skinny.
The problem when you're in that phase, you always think no matter what, you still have some, you know, like weight to lose. You know, that's the tragedy, that you're never happy with what you have. You think you should even, you know, lose more weight, right? And, well, luckily for
me,
I never got to that point where I got ill. But, you know, some people die from this illness. It can be a very severe illness, you know.
Well, we were actually, Starly, my guest this week, we were talking a lot about just measuring your life against other people. And she was in the beginning of the episode Tuesday's episode, she was talking about kind of looking at the gaps in her life, and she was looking at the gaps as like not having a boyfriend or a house or mm-hmm. something like that. But I think the weight thing kind of connects to that, because we are all measuring our bodies against this like fake body that is airbrushed and not real.
But I think it's
real.
A lot worse now. It's worse now with social media. I mean, we didn't have social media. We had nothing, really.
But you still had an eating disorder without social media. Like somehow you felt like you needed to shrink to be.
Yeah, I guess that illness can be, you know, in anybody. But I think it's worse, a lot worse now, because you're always comparing yourself to the people in the media and even your friends who are always posting. Nobody mm-hmm. posts, you know, negative, or hardly anybody posts negative things. You're not going to post, I'm having a lousy day. You're mm-hmm. always posting how great things are and, you know, blah, 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 right?
Well, there's also just like, I think it's hard to maintain balance. Like, I've lost some weight and I've been posting videos of myself working out, but I feel positive about that because people write me being like, oh yeah, I'm working out too. Or they'll like cheer me on. And that feels positive. But then I guess there also is a world where it makes someone feel bad.
I don't think that this could make somebody feel bad because what you're doing is not easy. So it's not something that, you know, it's just not magically falling off. You're really working on it. So I don't think that mm-hmm. this would make somebody feel bad. You know, maybe some people might think, I wish I could do it. I wish I had the willpower to do it, but maybe they could have. Maybe you can actually, you know, be a good influence on people, you know. So, I mean, I really don't think.
I don't think
that would make people feel bad, you know.
All right. So you and I are perfect?
No, nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. That's the thing. We all are working hard, you know, but nobody's perfect. Yeah.
If there was one perfect person in the world,
who
would it be, though?
I have no idea, because I don't think there's a perfect person in the world, you know?
Okay. Set you up to compliment me, but...
You wished. Yeah.
Well, I feel like we just talked a lot about body mm-hmm. image and stuff. Do you feel like as you've gotten older, like when did 17 was obviously the hardest time for you because that was, you weren't getting your period anymore. You had to go to the mm-hmm. doctor and start like really.
Yeah, but I don't remember everything, how I felt and all that. But I don't think that I looked at it as an illness or a problem at that time, you know. Said people didn't really, I don't know if anorexia, you know, being anorexic, if that term was known or talked about, you know.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. I don't really, when I think back, it doesn't seem to be like a huge problem, you know. I think that happened.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that do you get more confident as you get older about your body, or is that just something
no,
that's
it's always,
always
there?
There?
You know, and the older you get, I think the harder it is to lose weight. You know, that's the problem.
Yeah. But then there's got to be some level of acceptance where it's like, okay, this is my body.
I'm not obsessed with it. I would like to lose weight, but it's not something that's, you know, like I'm not thinking about it day or night. And, you know, if it happens, it happens. And I would never, you know, like take some, you know, strange pills or, you know, do mm-hmm. liposuction or something like that. I would never go that far, you know. If I can't achieve it by myself, then
forget it,
you know.
Well, I think that there's almost something comforting about just the reality that, like, no matter what size, because we all know what it's like to be, I mean, maybe not we all, but definitely you and I know what it's like to be thinner and or on the heavier side. But either way, if we're constantly always sort of dissatisfied, then isn't the logical kind of takeaway that we can just like drop it altogether and just be? And then what, you know, like right now I'm more motivated to lose weight because mm-hmm. I'm on camera and it's mm-hmm. it feels nice mm-hmm. to be athletic, and I feel like when I'm chasing Wolfie around I can feel my body in a healthier way, so that's a good goal. But also, like, when I'm in a writer's room, if I do gain weight, then that's also not a tragedy.
I mean, you know, like at the end of the day, it depends how much overweight you are. You know, of course, you know, if you're a lot overweight, it's not good for your health. It's not good for your heart and, you know, everything else, you know. Mm-hmm. But if you're a little bit chubby, it's okay, you know. Like, we can't all be that thin.
I feel like if we all as a society just agreed to be a little bit chubby, we'd all be 95%
happier. Yes.
Happier.
Maybe one day it'll come. You know.
All right. Yeah, so
maybe
let's do
it'll
that.
Come one day, you know.
All right. Goody, goody listeners. Here's my pledge to you. Let's all be a little chubby together. Okay. Is that a pledge? So. Okay. I'm so tired.
All right.
Okay, mommy.
Love you
I love
too.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 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 You're my mommy. You're my mom. Bye.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Engineered and mastered by Alex Sarche. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.